Hey everybody, this is Brendan Detzner, welcome to Bad Grammar, and I'm so very lucky to be here in the beautiful Andersonville home of Ms. Maggie Wagner. Maggie, how are you doing
today? Hello.
All right, and frequent attendees to Bad Grammar will know that Maggie has been with part of our stable, or whatever you want to call it, for a period of time now.
Yeah, like 2 or so years.
Something, because you were...
2 to 3.
Yeah, because you were in, when we were in Pilsen. That was was still a going thing.
At your beautiful artist studio.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yes, and now, and then moving on to Powell's. And Maggie, you have a distinction, and this is a big deal, I think, ooh, of being, like, I mean, you know, when my parents come to go see Bad Grammar, you know, they like my work, but you're the draw, really.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
Like, really, oh, yeah, they told, it's, like, very,
oh my gosh,
you know, it's one of those things where it's like, we were thinking of leaving, but you know when Maggie is reading? Because
oh
we don't want
gosh
to leave until Maggie, I don't know if you've heard this, but this has been made clear to you before.
Tell them I said thank you. I had no idea.
You didn't
I
know that?
No
okay,
idea.
Well, now you do. It's really, it's very securely, yes. You know, and
like,
you know,
I'm blown away. That's awesome.
Yeah, and this is just a frequent topic. You know, whenever this comes up, you know, and like my mom, you know, we'll mention this pretty often.
I'm gonna buy them a bottle of wine.
Dude, you could do yes.
Yeah.
That would be appreciated. It would, you know, that can happen. which I guess, like, okay, so just, you know, be aware of this.
Yay.
This is important.
I don't know why, I just keep on looking at the stream of this on your computer.
Oh, the thing where it's like, yeah, wherever
it's
we start
mesmerizing
talking, it makes little bumps and things like
it's
this.
It's mesmerizing to watch. I'm looking away.
Okay, should I maybe, I don't, you know, it'll be sort of, you know, professional.
I like it.
Damn it. Okay, because as you talk very, very softly, it doesn't really make a whole lot, and then it's a little bit louder,
whoa,
and a little bit louder, and a little bit louder, and then it goes on again. See, it's kind
for
of
for everyone
game
listening, this is my very first podcast. I've never podcasted before.
It's okay. This is like, I mean, it's they've made it the technology idiot-proof at this point, which helps for me, since
that's...
I still screwed up. I don't mind anybody, you know, hearing. Actually, like with Harold had to read his story twice because I, you know, made a dumb mistake, which is the first time I've ever had to do that, but I don't think it will happen this time.
Fingers crossed. Fingers
what was I even
crossed
talking about? Oh, my parents, okay, anyway, my folks will have work, which is not to say they don't, you know, interested in all the other stuff, but it does kind of underscore how you sort of have, like, a little different style. Like, I mean, how do we even know each other? Anyway, like, because we, it was through Brandon Sitchling.
Yes, Brandon Sitchling.
But then was it one of those things, because there's only 50 people in Chicago, we...
Yes, indeed. Alex.
Yeah.
Alex, your cousin Alex.
Okay, right.
Was
yeah,
a
yeah
friend of Brandon's.
Yes.
We worked together at Whole Foods.
Okay, yes.
Out in, oh God, like Forest
mm-hmm
Park, which poor Brandon would have to get up at the crack of dawn every morning.
Yes.
He would leave.
Well, Forest
an
Park
hour
is where I live, and I don't think there's a Whole Foods around. I think, was it up north?
Maybe Deerfield. Deerfield.
This is an important distinction for the people. I
am originally from Minnesota, so my knowledge of Illinois suburbs is really, really
this
bad.
Is the Forest Park, you know,
really
it plays
bad
an important role in, you know,
yes,
in my mythos. So I just want to make this clear to the people that,
yes,
you know.
My apologies.
But it's okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. So originally it was, yeah, I mean, yeah, cousin Alex brought in Brandon, who then brought in, like, the likes of you. But then, you did you know Rory already, or did you meet Rory through
I
the thing?
I met Rory through the Bad Grammar session that I first saw him in. He brought in something called, I can't remember the name of it. It was a demon possession
yes
first date piece.
Right, mm-hmm.
And blew me out of the water. I loved it.
yes. Okay, so it wasn't, I was just trying to think, I see him,
and even
I think it was more than one thing, because we have... Because only 50 people live in Chicago, so that's how everybody
yeah
knows everyone else. But how does, yeah. I'm trying to think what the, I thought there's another source of connection somewhere.
Larry Santoro also.
Yes.
Was,
okay.
We discovered fairly early on when I saw him reading, I also, another reader who just blew me out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
Yes.
So good. I talked to him after a reading of his long, long ago. And we both determined, oh, we have theater roots in Minnesota. We know each other from way back when. He was like, do you know this company? Old Log Theater, Plymouth Playhouse. And I said, I know each of those. I know so many. Old theater people die hard. We just, everybody goes back. It's a community of 5 people. And we just
yeah
repeat ourselves in
and
every
they,
community.
They're sporing,
yeah,
you know. So they just, you know, every so often they split into 2 theater people that they go out
yes
to. Yes.
Yes.
You're from Minnesota.
Yes, I am.
Okay, I could have, I don't know. Anyway, were you brought here originally by the likes of theatery stuff, or was it something else?
I originally came to Chicago to do more theater stuff. I was a DePaul undergrad student with their theater program.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing writing program there. And that's how I got my start doing playwriting. And now I tend to do more musical writing. And I think the first thing I brought into you guys was a song from a musical I've been working on, like an adaptation of My Antonia. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Dirge, I remember. By some Russian
yeah.
men.
I remember because, okay, and this is maybe a dangerous peek behind the curtain here because I do have, because Bad Grammar is not an open mic. It is sort of like, you know, there's, you know, certainly, I have people send me the stuff in, mostly just because people that are too scared to send the stuff
scared.
In.
I was Were scared. I was scared, like, what if he doesn't like it?
Well, it's,
what if he says
yeah.
no?
Okay, but you did it anyway, which is a big, even just by itself, I mean, I almost don't even need to look at the thing. But I just remember, like, reading the lyrics where it's just sort of like, I have no idea how to interpret lyrics. This is from another world, but it looks okay, so she's fine. You know, and it worked out swimmingly, but,
Lyrics is hard. Lyrics are like poetry and math.
Yeah.
Because you have to, it's good music theater lyrics. It's not exactly writing a pop song. It's not, you know, it's not your Katy Perry.
Because there's some, you have to do all the normal storytelling stuff that you have to do.
Yes.
That...
It's so many components of you have to take your story from here to here, start at point A, end at a completely different point, hopefully making it a little bit circular, nice and round.
Yeah.
But also, it's very mathematical in the amount of syllables per line,
mm-hmm.
what each line ends with. You have to keep track. You're going through each and every
yeah.
one. And
it's like trying to throw a dart at a board like a mile away as far as like anything coming of these things. I mean, just because musicals, even if it's like your cool street underground musical that isn't like some giant thing, it takes so many moving parts and so much resources and that stuff.
It's
yeah.
one of the hardest things to pull together, especially because you have to have collaborators. Unless
yeah.
you're awesome and you're like Stephen Sondheim and you can, or you're like Jason Robert Brown who can do everything and,
mm-hmm.
and has a piece for every component, like the geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
You're working with collaborators. Like I do a lot of the book writing and I'm new at the lyrics portion.
Okay. So, I mean, aside from like the monologues, which is mostly, I think,
yes.
what Bad Grammar folks might know you from, like, is the musical, I mean, is that occupying a lot of your creative time?
It
or?
Does occupy a lot of it, mostly because I teach it as well.
Okay.
As do it, I teach it with Chicago dramatists.
Okay. So that's something you're spending a lot of...
It's like a nice little OCD area for me. I love it so much. I have to talk about it to everyone. Hey, have I told you about the good word, the musical?
And you're,
come
this is always,
it. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like the Jehovah's Witness for a musical.
Okay. Well, okay. I think this underscores because I mean, you mentioned Larry, and
yes.
Larry is like the odd guy that has. Well, I mean, you can't swing a stick in the lovely city of Chicago without hitting theater folks or having them involved in whatever you're doing. And this is they're just you know, they like. I'm trying to think. I was gonna say, I don't know, like not like cockroaches or something because it's positive
yes,
mostly.
That's exactly
but it's
how
like,
I would describe
it's,
it.
That's
you
how
can't
you would
get
describe
rid
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're just kind of all over the place, and there's no they're always gonna get in, and they're never gonna go away. And
you put up the Roach Motels, they just
you
come
kill
back.
One, and two will rise.
That's an accurate description.
Yes. Okay. Well, point being, Larry had Larry Santoro is one of the rare guys that had like a huge theater background. And also had like a huge genre fiction background where he actually went to Twilight Tales and, you know, Tina Jen's events and other places, which was probably how he roundabout heard about Bad Grammar, I think.
And I have you to thank for Gumbo Fiction, too. I wouldn't have known about it if not having met Tina through a Bad Grammar session.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure
getting
that once Tina
something.
Saw you, yeah, she would, like, I mean, you know, Tina goes hard. I mean, and I don't know if you know the whole thing, but I mean, Tina running Twilight Tales, which was her pre-Gumbo Fiction Salon thing, that was one of those, like, you know, there's, like, six different things that are going on because of, you know, people that met each other there. So that is a...
It's a wild world out there.
It is a wild world out there,
no
but,
idea.
Yes. Point is that it's like, okay, but that's something distinct from, like, theater, really. And if you
it
go
really
to Gumbo
is.
Fiction, even aside from, like, Bad Grammar, it's like, you know, it's just kind of a different scene and kind of a different deal, sort of. And
I always love it when I can convince. I've had a couple of friends come into Bad Grammar readings, and I just said, "It's exactly what you would do, what you would see on a stage. It's like improv, but these guys are polished. They know their stories. They're reading from them, but it's really interesting how the worlds collide and how nobody knows that they do."
Yeah, well, that's just the. I mean, I'm interested to hear you talk about that part, just
mm-hmm.
because. I mean. As I got to know you better, this is sort of diminished, and now it's more like, okay, Maggie is here, but especially the others are like, wow, she's awesome. Don't know what the hell she's doing here, but okay, great, let's have more of, yeah, more of
I
that place. She
thing.
Keeps coming. Yeah.
I did the same.
Right.
The same thought went through my head. What am I doing here at
yes.
this place? Mostly, I will say mostly because it was fairly male.
There's that too.
One of the time I was there, there were lots of male population represented very nicely.
Yeah.
So I felt a little bit like the odd man out.
Like, yeah, and that's, I don't know. I think we have occasionally done, but like, it's one of those things where it's like, I go back and I struggle. I think this is probably something I've talked about here before, where it's like, I never want anybody to feel like, okay, no, well, you know, I was just dragged in to meet this part of the bingo card, sort of, you know, where it's like, I was just sort of like, you know, if I just keep pursuing this and I just kind of keep asking people who I think are cool, it'll even out eventually.
Yes.
And it sort of has, mostly kind of. It's not really.
I see more female readers at every new Bad Grammar session, and it makes me happy.
A little bit. I'm glad to have that sort of pop. You know, just because that's, I never worried about that, because here's the other thing. I'm the only guy that I know that, like, runs a regular, not anymore. There's actually the guy that runs the one, in my lovely hometown of Forest Park.
Yeah.
Is actually, okay, it's another guy running a reading series, but mostly it's, like, Tina was running one, and Jenny was running, and Claire ran one that was taken over by, you know, by Janelle.
And none of these are,
yeah, mostly home by ladies, and for that reason, like, I never thought of... I just thought that that was just how it would just sort of naturally work out, where, you know, where, like, ladies would show up, and, you know, and then when I sort of took over it, I'm thinking, well, I'm friends with tons of ladies, and I'm asking the same people, sort of, and it's like, and it just defaulted to dudes in a room for a while, pretty quickly there, until it kind of kicked in, so.
That's okay. We changed that.
Yes.
We changed that.
Yes, it just changed.
We changed it for you.
It's still, you know, ongoing, but it's to be worked on, but anyway, again, not really a problem in... like, sort of straight-up theater. So, it's like, I didn't know, sort of, like, just see, so I'm sort of glad to hear that, because I didn't know what your impression of it was first coming in.
Totally new. Yeah. But I really love the aspect of Bad Grammar that's a lot like a lot of storytelling meetups that you would find in Chicago. So say the Moth has good representation.
Okay. Well, that's a whole other issue, because like, I mean, because then the tricky thing is when you're trying to explain what we're doing, so it's like storytelling. It's not quite like that. It's sort of, you know, or it's an outgrowth of, no, we're doing that before. You know, it's tricky that way.
But like, there's so many similar elements to it.
I
happened to at least in the process of getting involved with Bad Grammar, also got involved with there's a couple of places in town. Salonathon is a great place for, essentially, it is a planned open mic where you do get readers, you get performance artists, everything. I got involved with the Abbey Fest, which is also another really cool that is straight up.
That was the one that Eileen Tall had a one lady show in.
She is a super big influence on me getting up and taking the stage places. Super great lady. If you ever get a chance, to go see her, do her show live. She has something of everything. She's got performance art. She's got stand up. Something in her bag for every occasion, which is incredibly smart.
Okay.
Yes.
Quick question, and I'm curious about this, just because you put like the amount of the amount of effort that people put in, you know, just in Bad Grammar, the idea is at least sort of that, like,
you come in,
it's right, sort of like, right, well, it's like kind of like a writer's first kind of thing, and by part of making it the, it's not an open mic kind of thing, is that it weeds out some of what, I'm trying to think if I talked to, if we are to, when I did the, you listened to the podcast with Mike, right?
I did.
Did we talk about horse sex? Did we talk about that as a metaphor?
Say again?
A horse sex.
I don't really
think so. Okay, this is the concept behind horse sex, and then you can tell me how you... Okay, this is what it is. Where that at a Twilight Tales reading, which that was a pure open mic, and that was for this reason, because it's like a pure open mic with a 20-minute limit of people reading from things for 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like, it was hardcore. And it was, you know, a big deal, and it's a wonderful, and because I had no theater performance background at all, that was the only way that I was ever going to be in front of a microphone. Otherwise, it could easily never have happened at all.
Yeah.
But like, you would get some weird people, and I actually kind of liked that about it. And one of the things, and this was typified by one evening when the thing where it was like 3 hours, the show was like 3 hours long, and it was both begun and ended by stories that were about people having sex with horses. And in one story, it was like a furries kind of situation where there was like an anthropomorphic sort of like horse or something. And then in the second one, it was like some kind of like alien horse. There was mind control involved. And point being, it was sort of like, You know, it was an adventure, let's say, because you didn't know.
Developed
you know.
Its own theme right there.
And yeah, it happened this completely incidentally. I mean, but like, point being, it's like even though there was sort of an adventure to that I kind of like, even though you would definitely get people that you didn't really want to listen to read for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
There was sort of a sense of adventure to it, like. Mm-hmm. Roll the dice, see what you get. But I tried to avoid that a little bit. With bad grammar, just by screening it a little bit.
And if you are offering a form in which you have come in with something that you've worked on meticulously, you want to make sure, all right, I'm developing this form for the person who's also worked on something meticulously, whether or not it's my style.
Right. And that's even like when I'm trying to explain to people what I'm looking, you know, what we're looking for. It's like. Really more like, I want it to be worked on very hard, and then I don't want to be bored. And that's it. Aside from that, you know, and we still throw the genre thing is, and I've taken an incredibly long way around to my actual question
Maybe one sweep through, although your name is bad grammar, making sure everybody can use the grammar properly.
Yes, because, or even if they're using the grammar poorly in such a way that is, you know.
That's really
at cool. least, long way around to my question, which I now have to bring back in. Okay, I guess. Point being, like, even though some of the very worst stuff just sort of gets filtered out, then you don't get people like, you know, if you go just like a regular, like reading at a bookstore for somebody that has no performance background at all, very often you can get people, and I've seen writers that I dearly love do this, just sort of sit up and like read the thing in a fairly kind of flat kind of way. It's like, yeah, it's sort of what I did. And I much prefer that to people that try to get too fancy and ridiculous because like,
that would be me.
No, that's not you at all, because what you're doing is a whole different, and this is what I'm like, okay, this is sort of the crux of it, you know, because it's like, you actually have performance, you know, actual part of it. Whereas with, like, I sort of cling to this sort of idea where it's like, you know, if you bring it, if you're writing something sort of working on it hard and it's something that you're excited about and then you go and you read it, even if you're not really a performer first, it's sort of like something of that will come out and it'll have, like, a quality to it that you'll kind of like that you can't necessarily
And sometimes get. That definitely helps in terms of, like, when I'm trying to generate work.
Uh-huh.
I'll think to myself, what is interesting? What is the kind of story I want to hear?
Mm-hmm.
What would be fun to sit down and do a minute of? And if I've gotten halfway through something and it's like, well, that's a thing that exists. I'm not really connected to it. I just try and scrap it all and find
just go for the positive.
The little nugget in the middle that makes me go, oh, that's a really good story. I'm compelled by this story. And part just of it is hearing stories and listening to stories and listening
thinking
to
of that. Yeah. Is there something that, like, when you're hearing people at, like, bad grammar read where, like, the theater side of you pops up a little bit where it's just like, oh, they did that thing again. Oh, they don't know any better. I'll tolerate it. But it would be much better if they did. Like, I mean, does anything come up where you feel like we could do a little better somehow?
Strangely, I don't. When I'm in there and I'm listening, I allow myself to get wrapped up in it most of the time.
Yeah, and it works.
And
okay.
Especially, like, when you find a story that you love, you're just sitting there, eyes glued. I need to know what happens next. I get really caught up in that stuff. I must know what happens next. And I think
that's cool. That's great.
I used to get people come to me afterwards. So if Mike or if Rory had come up to read something, they said, "You had this look on your face the whole time." I said, "Really? Because I don't know when I'm doing that. I do not know when this look happens."
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's either, I thought maybe I really disturbed you, or you looked really sick.
Oh, they're
sick.
Talking to you, and they're like, wanting to know if you were offended somehow.
Exactly. Then, did I do something wrong? And I said, no, that's me being completely wrapped up in your story.
Well, that's funny, just because, I mean, the subject matter that both of those guys get into can be things that sort of on paper, like, you wouldn't expect the compassion and sort of the humanity that is there with some of the things that get
Alex, every once in a while, I get caught up when Alex brought in his Neanderthal pieces. Something about that was just really compelling to me. It was a story I wanted to hear. Really cool. And so, the more I come back to bad grammar, the more of that I get, and I enjoy that the most. So
okay,
I love
back. That's cool. This
I can't
is really,
critique you. I can't.
You can't. I'm just curious, just because again, it's a left field, and you know, and left field is good, and I'm happy about that. And it's the hardest thing to. Like, from the audience's point of view, where it's like, what's it going to be? Where it's like, you don't know, man. You know, that people, or even just from performers, where it's just like, well, what if I'm not like all the other people? Then I'll be ecstatically pleased. Come on in and be not like the other people. But, okay, so I'm glad to hear. This is good. This is excellent.
The street is a two-way street. If ever I get incredibly crazy, and you're like,
I'm not going to be the source of, like, I mean, if you're getting incredibly crazy and you need someone to rein you in, then you need to look for that from other sources.
Cause I'll bring in a professional.
Right. It's totally to my benefit if you, you know, yeah. Where does Veggie Diaries have a life beyond, well, because Veggie Diaries is mostly, with the occasional exception, is mostly what you've been reading.
Yes.
At Bad Grammar. Does that have a life beyond Bad Grammar, or is it mostly been read there, or what's the deal here?
I know Bad Grammar was the origination point for it.
It was. Okay.
Because I had a number of short stories, and I think I used to do a bit more of this, say, on like personal journals or within the confines of, say, Facebook, where I would try to generate a story that could relatively work well as a monologue. I did more monologues back when I was still a DePaul student, and I would generate them in order for people to use them, and they're good to submit, easy things to submit.
Yeah.
So I have this like default position in my brain that says, oh, that would make a good monologue. Try it out. Couple hours of your time. Boom. And it was just generating the first one of these that made me go, this could be a theme. I should start working on a theme that is, what do vegetables have to say? Because none of these, it's strangely enough, none of these stories are vegetables. They're people stories.
Yeah, well, that's really, I mean, just the amount of variety that is like, I mean, and again, I think bringing in some of the other background, where like the voice is just always perfect and just kind of completely out of left field, where it's just
a character thing.
It's that great kind of like, okay, what the fuck is going on? You know, but it's never, I mean, randomness gets boring.
Exactly.
But sort of, where am I being inevitably drawn to?
As long as there's a point. Yeah. As long as there's a point, we're coming to a conclusion with all of this.
Yeah.
And usually it's the same work that you do in, I hate to do this again, songwriting.
Yes.
It's the same work you're doing in songwriting. A good song will have a character go on a journey. A good monologue does the same thing. Songs and monologues are almost akin in that nature, that they have a character go on a journey. They start at point A and they end somewhere different. And hopefully in a compelling way that makes you go, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know asparagus had that behind him. That's
okay,
interesting.
Okay, that's that. Here's a quick, this is an interesting, because I've thought about this with regards to a couple of different people, but what are good, like, good songs to listen to for short story writers?
Do you think?
As far as, like, for people that want to, because this has crossed my mind that there's, like, I mean, Randy Newman is the one that I always throw at people, just because it's like, yeah, he's my favorite short story writer. He's great. But what else? Yeah, what else?
Oh, God, that is a good question, too. Yeah. I absolutely love, Tom Waits has a really nice, he's a really nice tendency of creating little characters in little situations and just making it a microcosm within the story. I get totally inspired by listening to Tom Waits. Todd Snyder is something of a folk hippie artist.
Mm-hmm.
God, there's a great song of his that's wonderful. Most of his are kind of adult white liberal male anger stories. So there's a great song of his called I'm In Between Jobs that is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Oh God, rap artists. I've been absolutely in love with an artist called Bus Driver for the longest time. And his is more, his tends to be a bit of a stream of consciousness, but the strange thing is I'm compelled by him and his persona throughout his stories. A lot of great songwriters write themselves in, and he's got a personality that makes me go, I want to know more. Musical theater, I know. Sometimes it's fun, but it's really a nice little microcosm. One of my favorite things. Oh God, what's the name of it? cabaret artists. There's a song. Oh God, I will never come up with the artist who sang it. But I believe it's called Errol Flynn, and it's a female songwriter who's writing a story about her father who used to appear in movies with Errol Flynn, and she's watching him now, and she says, look at me, boys, now I'm older than him, about her own father, and oh, God, it starts off, in a hall and a wall and a house in Reseda, there hung an old poster with two nails and a pin. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It sets you in a place and you're like, oh my God, I'm there. I'm there. So I'll stop talking now.
No. This is all good. This is good for to chase down. Okay.
A lot of times songs will just have introduce you to a beautiful world and take you out of it in the span of 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And you won't even know why.
It's just a snappy
Book
comparison.
Of Mormon. For some reason, I can't stop singing Book of Mormon when I'm just out in the middle of
that
nowhere.
That was the one, the South Park.
Yep.
Spooking from
South
again.
Park,
this is some, you know, like, I'm going to fail. Yeah.
Guys,
I do know that one. Okay.
One
yeah.
of the guys behind Avenue Q.
Okay.
I'll just
okay.
bust out in the middle of, here's my daughter, she has a wonderful disposition. There's a song about everybody having AIDS.
Yes. Yes.
But it's incredibly effective, and when it's effective like that, it's like, oh God, where did this come from? Why am I singing this in the middle of Trader Joe's? Why?
Or
oh.
Just, if, yeah, has that, yeah, that hokey, I like the... I can't even say, I don't know if it was the facial expression. I know what you're talking about. Just
yeah.
sort of that particular thing where it's like.
And that's also, they
yeah.
can tell a good joke. They have there's a mastery behind the South Park guys and their ability to really tell a good timely joke within
yeah.
a song lyric. Because that's quantum physics. That's hard. That
yeah.
is hard not to say. And when you don't see it coming, I'm handing you a Nobel Prize.
Right.
I didn't see that coming. Kudos to you, gentlemen.
And it must be,
oh, man.
I mean, I don't know if in your, you know, in your teaching, you know, I'm sure you love all your students desperately, but I'm sure you've
yeah.
been exposed to the, you know, more predictable,
every,
you know,
yeah,
what it sounds.
So often,
mm-hmm.
when you have a musical theater piece, there's a strange tendency to know exactly, like, oh, yep, this is going to be one of those. This will be, you know, kind of like your menopause, your
Yeah.
Vagina monologues.
Mm-hmm.
This it's they fall into types more easily. And I
right.
think for music theater.
Yes.
That's it's a bit of a leg up simply because it's really hard to generate something new
mm-hmm.
when you have sort of a nice basis for here's my idea, here's what I'm gonna start from. It does a little bit of the hard work for you that lets you get a little bit more complex with the songs that you generate.
So it actually helps to becoming at left field from
there's a lot.
What it seems to be meant for, kind of.
Yeah,
like,
there's a lot of unspoken little rules. Like, there's a lot akin to screenwriting and musical writing, and a lot a lot of tenets that hold for each. Especially too when you have your audience for such a brief time. You know, if you're only seeing a 2-hour movie, if you're seeing a 2.5-hour show,
mm-hmm.
you get one shot to make sure they hear that word. Make sure they see that object.
To
statement.
Actually get them talking about that thing.
Exactly,
that,
exactly.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the same benefit of somebody with a book of short stories where you can go back and read that passage 5 times and say, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You get very little opportunity to do things twice.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, again, just thinking about lots of genre fiction things, like I try to explain to people, like, I mean, I get almost equally annoyed by people that are really, like, universally gung-ho genre fiction, or, like, with fantasy especially, like, and
mm-hmm.
with people that are, like, sort of universe, sort of, like, against it all the time completely. And one of the big things that does get to me is, like, I think that there's a community for certain kinds of genre fiction that actively doesn't want what you're talking about, where rather than, like, they don't want something that's sort of, like, honed that's going to drag them into a specific spot, it's like they're just sort of, like, taking a bath in words. You know, which is why they're more than happy to read through like a couple 100,000 words where it's like, well, it doesn't sort of go anywhere exactly, but it's sort of like warm and splashy. And I do, one of the really helpful things I think about, you know, even if you're not somebody that is a performer first, was sort
mm-hmm.
of like getting in front of an audience, especially an audience that's there for something as like a variety,
yeah.
you know, where they don't have a particular thing that, you know, expecting you to dish up where it's like, it's kind of like, I mean, again, it's the same thing. If you know you got to submit it, you know, if you know it might not be good enough or that
mm-hmm.
the crowd might not be, that they might walk out, you know, and they might not
I
even
just
walk
came
out for
my friend Steve.
Yeah, yeah,
if
yeah.
I get anything better, awesome.
Right, you know, or whomever was, I mean, well, I mean, Michael Pankus has had a couple of people walk out for what I consider to be honorable reasons, just where they like, you know, but like, but I mean, yeah, just the idea, you really only have so long, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's competition, you know, you actually have to. And that's something that some people get and some people don't. And that's, even if you don't have any, I don't know, that's an interesting.
And
Yeah.
There's a certain element I say too where it's like, oh, read your book on screenplay writing. That kind of thinking can bog you down just as much as the it has to be absolutely free form and not hindered to anything. There's like you if you go too far on either end of the spectrum, I think you hit certain areas. It's like there are plenty of great, you know, greatly crafted musicals, short stories, whatever, that do absolutely nothing for me.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, so much ink has been spilled over, like, well, here's how you have that perfect first line. And lines that follow any of those things where it's like, oh, well, that's one of those perfect first line lines.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, like, the things that do it still create that effect that that you were mentioning before where it's just sort of like, okay, boom, I'm there. You know, and I've read so many first pages that do that and where it's like, I couldn't tell you why at all. I can't play just for some reason. And, like, there's a little bit of it is just confidence. But aside from that, it's like, it's still spooky, you know.
And
I don't
sitting at home generating something like that. It's like that when you've got a piece that you know. It's like, oh wow, I'm really excited about this. There's so little explanation that can say, well, why are you excited? I don't know. I just know in the back of my brain, I'm really interested. I've written something that I would read.
Yeah.
So I'm sure other people would want to as well.
Right. Just that, like, yeah. I mean, I have always talked about it as sort of like, you know. When is it done? When do you finish revising? It's like when the bell rings.
Yeah.
You know, and as soon as the bell rings, I kind of know that I'm done, and I almost never get good results out of going back to something after the bell has, you know, has rung.
There's a great many unfinished or finished long ago stories or even plays out there that I've buried away, kind of thinking to myself, oh, if I could have just changed this one up. Nope, not going
to
do it.
Just have to.
It exists as it exists, yeah. And to play with it any further would just be too much.
There's more. What do you have for us today?
I have some vegetables.
Uh-huh.
Some vegetables. I brought many, which would probably be common knowledge to anybody who'd been to a bad Grammy. You've probably heard one or two of these. I'm hoping to generate enough so that this could stand alone as a performance piece, whether it's a one-person show or a multiple-person show, just to generate a script worth of each of these little monologues.
Okay.
Vignettes.
All right. Well, I should stop the magic device here just for a second
so
we can get situated. And then, so next up, we have Ms. Maggie Wagner reading some Veggie Diaries.
All right. I have three vegetable diaries for which to present to you today, and the first one is called The Briny Deep. 161 days since submersion. The expedition is nearly bankrupt, and we are a skeleton crew. It pains me to lob insults at the last of us, but the hearty cukes full of fresh vinegar are now all gone, and what is left? Oh, I'll tell you what is left, because if I am honest, I keep log of everything still, but for no reason. I will print it for no one, and I will recount it only to myself ever. I embrace the end, and it is here, in a briny deep. It ends with me, and with Nubbins, who is the cuke who sports a long, curling stem, and with a cuke we call Time, because he forgot his given name when he was speared and escaped the prongs of the great shining trident, that portent of death that will take us all. He has a hole where he was speared and does laps in the brine, listing to one side, hobbling and shouting the idle threats to the trident. Finish what you started, he cries. Spear me like you speared the others. Part the waters and leave me flopping on the jar floor, deep in my mustard seed grave. I do not listen to Time. Most of my work goes to our invalid, floating among the dill fronds and the pearl onions and sinking piteously as his energy drains from him. He was once the captain of our expedition, Cornishon in chief, but he was split in half when battling the gleaming trident on our first days. The others let him list to the burning floors, or worse, they darted from his side when the trident reared its glittering prongs. I don't blame them. There's nothing but your instinct when the trident chases you, and your only option is to swim hard and fast, hoping to catch the current of the trident's wake
and be tossed far from its three piercing arms. The Cornishone chief, I look at him with envy. He is the only one of us with safety from the beast. It wants the strongest, the firmest, the most attractive of us first. So we have not bought us invalids and cars. I know why I have been here since the inaugural canning. We used to be packed into our quarters, hardly an inch to swim, all pucked and crispy and green. All but one. A whole half of me came up spotty and stark white. They used to call me Moldspore and press me up against the glass, white spots out. No one wants to get very close to the contagious cuke. I float the perimeter away from their rowdy jostling, and the trident spared me time and time again. The beast no longer comes to this great green feeding ground. We're none of us fresh, nor good sport. All we are is the dregs. Above the waterline, I see more and more of that stark white fuzz descending. This expedition was never meant to last so long. The captain, I remember him wailing out the numbers on our vessels. Sailed by August 7, 2013. We looked at that date for our freedom. We tapped the glass beneath it when the brine was high and the vessel was full. Those numbers were a lie. The expedition was a lie. The brine is shallow and the world shrinks every day. No one mentioned a word about the trident when we closed that ominous porthole. No one! With the cukes bored in the brine, we'd all do between violent thrashings. Is wager who would be the one to strike blows to the menace. Big stuff, because he was so large, or Squeaker, who was quick and canny. None of them survived him. I survive him now, but I don't want to kill him. I want to mount his back and ride far away from here. Tonight, I fashion a rope from Nubbin's curly stem. He won't put up a fight, not when I show him my white spots. Tonight, I float at the brine surface and wait.
Thank you so much, Maggie. And we have I'll be curious to hear if the cats can be heard.
We have a kitty. Her name there is Charlotte. There is
a kitty. She's a sweetheart, though. Oh, she's very sweet.
She will bite.
Yes.
She will bite. She's a biter.
That's quite all right. That's okay. I just want to, you know, let the people know why there's ringing ominously in the distance.
We have an audience member. She's really bored with all of this, though.
She's very pleased. I don't know. She seems pretty rather intrigued. Anyway, that can be done. Okay, we have more Veggie Diaries.
Yes. Please. I brought two more. Mm-hmm. Two more. So,
all right.
This next one is called Like, Oh My God. Dear Diary, this is like the total worst day. The most awful, pathetic, stupid day ever. But you already know because I found the inkiest Sharpie in my box. And I crossed out his name on every page. Potato Chips. I don't like him anymore, Diary. Potato Chips is mean. And so are all of his stupid friends. I hate him. I even took out that page I wrote last week. Diary, you're the only one who knows. I wrote my future married name like 5 dozen times so I could get it exactly perfect. And this is Potato Chips, and this is Potato Chips, and this is Potato... I'm so mortified I ever liked him, Diary. I feel so stupid. So used. And I, like, wrote some nasty, mean things about my friends in here, too. They were only trying to help. I see that now. Carrots was right when she called him deep fryer trash, and I was so angry with her for saying it about the boy I was crushing on so hard, but she was right. He's so oily, so crummy. I ripped out that awful page where I went all moony and called him the cutest, crispiest, saltiest snack I've ever seen. Let's, like, not talk about that again, Diary. Spinach was there for me, though. She found me in the girls' room after Algebra 2 and handed me paper towels while I sobbed. She told me I was going to be okay, and she told me a secret, too, Diary. You can never tell. But Spinach was like a little smitten with Bacon a long time ago. She wrote him notes and put stickers on his locker and asked him to spring formal. And you know what Bacon did? He crushed her.
He said it would never work because Beacon had a cholesterol-laden reputation to maintain, and she was just too good to fit in. Far too happy. He greased up her leaves and steamed her into oblivion. All that time, I was like writing about how conceited spinach had gotten when she was named a superfood. All that time, she was like heartbroken and alone. I am such a bad friend. Carrots still hates all the junk foods. Cupcakes especially. I always thought carrots was too hard on them. Or maybe she was just frustrated because she couldn't pair up with pizza or donuts. He's kind of cute. You gotta be really bad if you want to be a junk food, she like always says. And I see that now. I thought me and potato chips would taste great. I thought it was like the kind of disharmony that works somehow, like strawberries and basil. They've been studied since homecoming. Plus, cupcakes is a huge B-I-T-C-H, if you excuse my French diary. She is the one who swiped you out of my locker and read so loud from your pages that the whole cafeteria could hear. I'll, like, never forget that cold, cruel look on Potato Chip's face, though. He laughed and laughed at my lippy letters. All the parts where I called him cute and salty, he looked so amused and disgusted, like, me and her, no way. I was so mortified. So I was like, going to empty out my locker, run home, and disappear forever. It was so embarrassing, diary. But Spinach found me in the girls' room, and Carrots was waiting by the lockers, and we all three of us stitched fit period and snuck into the salad bar across the street. Spinach and Carrots are like my best friends, aside from you, diary. And I totally felt awful about every mean thought I'd ever had about them. Potato Chips is gonna wind up stale on a paper plate at some stupid diner somewhere. And cupcakes? She is gonna get stuffed into a freezer for a year after her wedding, bitch. But Carrots and Spinach and I, we're going out into a world of, like, culinary awesomeness. Spinach totally has her eye on getting aerated into molecular gastronomy. And Carrots wants to go international, like, Asian fusion. I don't know what I'm gonna do, diary. But I'm going to class tomorrow with my bronze all perfect, even if I'm not even going to look at the junk foods ever again. Plus, there's this new kid who's like super hot, really lanky and skinny and tall, Asper something. I'm finding him on Facebook, like right now. You're the best, Ari. Lots of love, forever besties. Cauliflower.
Maggie, it's really funny that I get to find. I've never seen these in print before. I've only ever heard them. This is like.
I try and stick to it.
This is pretty. It's.
I try and fail.
It's like. Well, I mean, it's just a strange thing to see. I mean, every last little.
Everything's
thing
there.
Like this. Okay. Anyway, we have one more.
All right. The third is my favorite, and it's. From what I hear, it's the favorite of a lot of people who hear it. It's simply called semi-autobiographical. Semi-autobiographical. There you go. Mm. And it's, when I originally wrote this, it was, if Truman Capote were a vegetable.
Okay.
The summer hothouse flower bed was winding down for the cold months. The wilt was on them. The petals browning nicely on July's once decadently colorful. No, not decadently colorful. On July's once achingly neon annuals. Hastily bought 2 for 1 under some steaming parking lot canopy. Growing indiscriminately on a scattered seed jumble, a squat little marigold and a leaning tower of snapdragons, each eyed the vacant plot between them. Somebody really ought to sit down root here and shade us. They'd insist. And well, it didn't take long for a gentleman to settle in. A dashing thing, jacketed in veiny forest floor green, and draped in, no, not draped in, bursting at his heart with curling lavender petals. Marigold and Snapdragon were drumstruck instantly. Who was he? Where did he come from? Certainly not that parking lot canopy where you were 8 to a crate, always starving for the mist of some stingy hose. He looked well fed, robust. Devastating. Snapdragon found her voice first. Were you some kind of cabbage?
He looked away, rooting himself deeper and reminding himself that these simple garden folk were blunt and unnuanced. Is that a word, unnuanced? Take credit for coining it. Anyway, the pedigreed vegetable of his upbringing must show the deepest patience for yokels of all stripes, no matter what kind of tactless questions they lobbed at him. No, madam, I'm not cabbage. I'm ornamental kale. The ladies oohed when he gave his title, but Kale couldn't be positive that their enthusiasm wasn't sarcasm. Truly, the salt-of-the-earth types were more likely to mock his mannerisms and condescendingly crinkle his curly leaves. The ladies seemed genuine and released a slew. No, not a slew. A raging torrent of questions aimed squarely to Kale's purple heart.
What does that mean? Are you vegetable?
Yes, Kale replied. Just not a very tasty one.
Why not?
I'm quite bitter. I wasn't grown for taste, mind you, Kale said. I was grown to be beautiful. The ladies heard this and became quite giggly. But Kale was not deterred. It wasn't every day these flowers encountered such a perfect specimen of crisp hardiness. Perhaps, he thought, these flowers had not considered their impending wilt. Perhaps they ought to know. I was developed for longevity, he said.
What's that supposed to mean, Cabbers?
Marigold asked, and Kale winced. It means, madam, that while you and the snapdragon here are dried to brown paper in the cold wind, I will be thriving. I was built to withstand such indecencies.
Oh, well then, la-di-da, sneered the marigold. Looks like no one told Cabbers what happened to the peony, that what had it plot of dirt just yesterday,
snapdragon said. Kale was appalled.
What do you mean, peony? He demanded. What happened?
There's a dog, said Marigold. They let her roam. She likes to taste things.
Love that peony.
What do you suppose that dog will make a kale?
Snapdragon asked, giggling.
Nice pile of purple vomit, I think.
The flowers broke into peals of laughter, and Kale condensed the lavender fronds of his head ever tighter. It was going to be an unseasonably... No, not unseasonably. It was going to be a bitter, cold frost. With this garden's company, he could see.
Thank you so much, Maggie.
You're
Maggie,
welcome.
For people that would like more Maggie, or that you know, would are interested in pursuing her work further,
exactly.
Where can they be directed?
I am on the Twitters. My handle is at S. Margaret Wagner on Twitter. Strange. S. Margaret. Just remember Maggie, Margaret. I also do a bit of work with the Chicago Dramatists. I teach for their new musicals program, and I believe they have some classes coming up. I can highly recommend checking out. If you're not even into musicals, it'll help you hone your script down. It's a great, great program that they've put together. And I also work pretty annually with the Enthusiasts Theater Company, which is they're new in town, and they've got something coming up on February 6th, 7th, and 8th. They're doing a series of short plays, and that will be coming up then.
Okay. All right, Maggie, thank you so much. It is a huge pleasure, and yeah, thank you again.
Yeehaw, thanks.
Bad Grammar is released according to a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported License. You can get the new Bad Grammar at iTunes and in the listen section of Brendan Detzner Online the first week of every month. If you'd like to support Bad Grammar, thank you very much. We're good, but we would encourage you, if you're feeling generous, to go ahead and check out www.protect.org to learn more about a cause that we wholeheartedly support. Our theme music is lovingly provided to us by The Gotsicles. You can find out more about The Gotsicles over at www.gotsicles.com. And that is it. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you here next month.